Alrighty, good morning, everybody. It is Monday. You got to get started at some point. May as well be now. Fuck, it's freezing cold. Morning, Ass.
Monday's a good day to start.
Monday's a good day to Monday. That's all I can think. Oh, okay. So how was your weekend? Anything fun? Anything exciting? Anything to update us on?
Well, I'm escaping the cold and off to Bali on Wednesday.
That's fair. Well, talk about putting the rest of us in the shade. You're off to Bali.
Yeah, so it was a lot of packing and planning, and if your summer wardrobe wasn't ready, then you're screwed.
Because,
now it's just winter stuff. Although there are a few spring things coming in already. They do push us, don't they?
Yeah, they push us. Yeah, you have to start thinking about, well, I don't mind thinking about spring, frankly. Mm. I could take a little bit of spring right now. I've had my share of winter, but I know we've still got until at least the end of August.
Oh, yeah.
It's miserable until then.
Well, technically, that's when spring starts. It's September.
I know. But in my head, everybody always goes, no, but August, it starts warming up. It doesn't.
Yeah.
It's still shit. All right. Indeed. But anyway, we're not going to let that get us down. Here's something else to get you down instead. Apparently, this morning at like 4 a.m. South African time, Donald Trump decided to raise tariffs to 40%.
From?
From America to South Africa and South Africa to America. So anyone who's exporting stuff to the USA, hardworking, South Africans are doing the absolute best selling stuff to the US. 40% is going to be slapped onto your stuff as it enters the US. And conversely, if you're importing anything from the US, you'll also have to pay a massive tariff.
Mm.
Now, it might sound like something worth getting cross with Donald Trump about, but he actually really didn't make it too difficult for this government to comply with a much, much lower tariff.
Mm.
All he said is he wanted four things. He wanted them to scrap BEE for American companies, which makes sense. Why should an American company
operating
here in South Africa have to do all of that bullshit BEE, which we know is bullshit. It's economic enrichment for the elite. That's what it is. That's what those three E's stand for. That was the one thing. The other thing he asked is that please can the government just outright condemn Kill the Boer?
Yeah.
I mean, how hard is it for the president and the cabinet and the executive of the country to say it's not a good idea to sing about killing people?
Mm.
You'd think that would be fairly straightforward. So that's two out of two. If they'd done those, they would have already been negotiating down from 40. 40% tariff is hardcore, right? Then there was no expropriation without compensation. They said if you're going to expropriate people, give them compensation, which, again, in basic free market economics is 101, right? I mean, if I take something from you, I must be prepared to pay you for it. Otherwise, I'm stealing it from you, right? That you would think that this was obvious stuff. And then I think the fourth one, I can never remember what the fourth one was. I don't remember exactly where it comes in or what it is to do with, but it could have been something to do with trade. I'm not entirely sure. Anyway,
was it free self-tanning beds for all?
Free self-tanning beds, tremendous, big, incredible tanning beds for everybody. Anyway, I don't know what's going to happen there, but it's not good. And of course, as usual, the people of the country need to be brought to suffer to the point where they want change enough. This is the sad reality, right? So I'm talking about us. We have to realize, and everyone in this country who still votes ANC has to realize, that these are not your friends. These people are going to go out of their way to make your life a misery, to make it harder and more expensive, and to tax you more, and to put you in a position where your life is worse, objectively worse, before any of us are going to go, oh, okay, I've had enough of this now. Because it's almost like we're abused wives or children. And we just keep thinking daddy's going to change. Daddy's going to get better. Mm. He's not going to come home and beat us. And everything will be okay in the long run. And he does love us. He keeps telling us he loves us even after he's beaten us.
Yeah.
And that's just not going to happen.
And things are going to change.
Yeah, you need to now either report daddy to the police, in this case the police is the U.S., because they're the only world's policemen that I can think of. Or you need to actually fight him. Make sure you're strong enough to. So that's irritating news that I had to wake you up with this morning, but it's necessary for you to know. And you've heard it here first. I don't think anyone else is reporting on this yet. So there we go.
Sure.
What's happening in the comments section? By the way, James, our producer, goes out onto the balcony at like 10. No, don't go. Oh, sheesh. At 10 to 6 in the morning for a ciggy. And yeah. I said to him this morning, you love a ciggy, hey? You must really love it to go out there. It's so fucking cold.
Oh, I would.
You would?
Oh, I'd go right now.
Really?
Yes.
You smoke in the car?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, so do my parents. Yeah. That's quite old school. A lot of people don't want people smoking in their cars.
Look, I don't have a new car.
Okay.
If I had a brand new car, that would probably last about 6 months before I would start smoking in the car.
Really?
Mm.
So you'd put it off. You'd think, I don't need to ruin this car immediately.
Yeah, and then
old, wet tobacco smell.
Yeah, and then it just creeps back in. But yeah. It's not like it's not as you wouldn't know it's a smoker's car, except for the burnt holes in the back.
Yeah, there are always those marks up here. You know, where the roof meets
where
the
you're
window.
Going over a bump, a pothole or something.
I only know because I grew up with parents who smoke, and yeah. they didn't give a shit, hey, when we were kids.
They would smoke in the car.
Oh, they'd hotbox us the fuck in the middle of winter. There was no fresh air. Fresh air, please. You had to get used to tobacco air.
No, I'm a very considerate smoker. I will not smoke.
I can't even picture you smoking anymore. I haven't seen you with a cigarette.
I can show you.
Time. You got them with you.
Yes. No, they're in the car.
Are you still smoking the Texan Plains?
Actually, no. I did switch to cheaper ones, though. because
the Gunstons.
Yeah, I'm just on the Gunstons. What are those blonde ones called? Gouloirs.
Gouloirs blonde.
Gouloirs blonde.
I just had a ciggy in the cold, says Vyas. And yeah, listen, I'm not judging you because I actually think this is a terrible generalization and it's maybe a stereotype full of shit on my side because I've got so many friends and family who smoke. I always find the smokers are the most chilled, happy people compared to the non-smokers are jittery as hell inside. they're doing everything else other than smoking. There's nicotine replacement patches and there's Zyn gum and there's fucking vapes. And the smokers are outside just being chilled and laughing. Having a good time.
It's so true. Oh, that reminds me, going to Bali to just yes. remind
Don't
you
take any
that
drugs,
I'm going
Leanne.
To Bali. Yeah, I had to pack all of my chronic medication, the boxes and the
inserts. Yeah, you got to have all that shit because if they think, and you look suspicious.
I look like I'm a traveling pharmacy.
Definitely. Well, you are.
Yes.
I mean, right now, how many pills do you have with you right now?
Quite a few.
How many do you take every day?
Oh, I've lost count.
Really? Is it that many? Because I take five different things.
It's like for some people it would be three swallows, and that's no vitamins. Wow. That's just meds.
Okay, no. I take like five things in the morning. I take some zinc and magnesium and.
Oh, those things don't really count.
But I know, but they're supplements and things, and it's nothing. I'm not taking any medicine.
Are you on no chronic medication?
Nothing. Thank God. I mean, I'd be bad at taking it. But no, I don't. I only have those vitamins, but it's such a pain. I leave in the morning to come and do the show, for example, and I have one of those bottles from the gym that has like a compartment underneath it with the pills, right? Mm. And then I pop all of these, like two at a time, and then swallow them down with whatever, if it's water or whatever I've got in the juice bottle. And then I always think if someone had to see me, they'd think, jeez, this guy's got big problems here. Because I'm like literally taking five pills. So it's like three rounds of doing these. And I thought if someone had to see this, they'd think there was something completely wrong. But clearly that's not even so bad. No. Are you doing more than 10?
No.
Oh, okay.
Let me try and see if I have something in here.
Here, rummage. Here we go. This is the morning rummage with Leanne Moll. Rummaging through her bag. Oh, there we go.
Yeah, I carry spares in case I forget.
Give me one of those. Let me try one.
Yeah, that's the morning dose.
Yeah. How many of those?
It's not so bad.
No, those are two vitamins.
Okay.
In terms of chronic, there's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7.
Jesus, you're falling apart. What are those for? What parts of you?
ADHD.
Okay. What is that you take for ADHD?
I don't know what it is. Just kind of helps me function a bit more.
Okay. All right. I believe you. Go on. What else?
Anxiety.
Look at this. Isn't this exciting? Hold them up for the camera.
I don't know how to get them in there.
What a lot of pills. You remind me of my aunt who used to...
Where's the camera? Is that it there?
I think your camera's over here, Leanne. Mm. She's going to drop them all over the floor. So I have... she's not actually my aunt, but she's a distant relative, and she used to take a lot of pills, but mostly just for fun.
Oh, no, goodness.
No. And she was old already, but she would drop these pills. Sometimes they'd fall out of her bag, and then the dogs would go lick them up and fall asleep for like 3 days.
No shame.
Or the dog would be fucking hyper. Like you just injected it with adrenaline.
And if it was an upper or a downer.
Oh, yeah. And then she'd say, "Hello, darling. You look like you're having a rough day. Would you like to feel better?" And this is, I don't know, I was like 14 or something. Next thing I knew, "Would you like an orange one or a brown one?" And I'd go, I don't know. Like, I don't think I should have either of them. She's like, "Have an orange one." Fuck me, did I make it through those family lunches being entertaining?
Oh, no.
Oh, yeah.
Jeez.
Probably MDMA.
So what I wanted to say about the Bali thing is that it's obviously, well, it's 4 flights there.
Oh, right.
And...
Oh, that's that, oh.
For a smoker, that's...
That's horrific.
It's a bit of a problem, especially because things have changed now. In the airports themselves, they aren't really smoking areas. And you can't really smoke outside near the airport either.
Smokers are more, they're less tolerated by society. They're more hated by the people who design buildings, the people who do all of that stuff, than vicious serial killer criminals. Mm. I mean, I even saw a vicious serial killer criminal room at the airport the other day, but I didn't see anything for smokers.
It was prayer room, like vicious serial killer room.
Vicious serial killer room. Yeah, exactly. They have the baby room right next to the vicious serial killer room.
No. They put the prayer room in between. So hoping that the vicious serial killer will stop at the prayer room on the way.
Okay.
And then, of course, it's no drinking because it's an Ethiopian Airlines flight.
Oh.
Yeah.
What are you going to do?
I'm going to be a joy. So it's my brother and I.
She's going to have no drinks and no ciggies.
And I think he's more worried about his state of mind due to my behavior.
Yeah, you're going to be very difficult to manage, hey?
No, you know what? I'll actually be perfectly fine. I'll probably just catch up on sleep.
I like this look that you've got going on here with all the grays and
the
whites.
And the monochrome.
Yeah, it's very, very good, ass. Oh,
thanks.
You, fashionista, huh?
The legs.
All right.
Sorry for showing off my guada. Didn't mean to do that.
All right.
Looks like the kind of girl.
You know... Who had a very neat space case and school books. Oh, you definitely did.
Yeah, I did.
You had a very neat space case.
Not as neat as some of the girls. I envied them.
Mine there was shit drawn all over it.
Oh.
It just looked like it had been decorated by either someone who'd eaten a box of crayons and vomited, or I don't even know why. Like it had colors and... all sorts of shit. I could hide maths formulas in there like you can't believe. No one would ever find them. So I had all of the equations for physics.
Remember we had those
somewhere.
Canvas bags that we used to decorate ourselves?
No, not really.
Like white canvas.
But there was
a
point.
I had pump up the jam on mine.
Yeah, but there was a point somewhere in high school where I just didn't have anything to put my stationery anymore. I had like one pen and that was it. I became... the opposite of this organized nerd at some point. I was like, nah, screw that. I'll just have one shitty pen which half writes. And I'll pay attention to a quarter of the class. Yeah. You stop trying to prove things at some point. I didn't care. I was like, okay, if I fail this subject, so what? What's going to happen? Luckily, I didn't fail any, but I mean, there were some that were dodgy. I only really clicked with maths halfway through the final year of school. And thank God for that, because otherwise I would have got, I don't know, 40% or something for it. But these days, I mean, I could pass with 40%, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, so again, I'm going to say this with peace and love, but kids today are just way dumber. They don't know anything. They look stuff up. They can look shit up. They can find things quickly on the internet or AI.
Can they?
Well, they can.
I don't know.
I don't know. Very young kids are able to find.
I think more inquiring than younger people.
But they don't. You may be more inquiring, but you see, I don't mind that. I think being inquiring means you're smart.
Younger people ask questions without Googling it themselves first.
Yeah, but that's just laziness.
Okay, so then younger people are lazy is what I'm
probably
trying to say.
Yeah, probably. But I think it's also a question of just not knowing anything. Have you ever sat down with someone and started a conversation and realized 10 minutes in that if they're not talking about themselves, they have nothing to talk about? They just don't have anything to say. They don't know anything. They've never been anywhere. They haven't read anything. They have no opinions, really. They just, if they're not talking about themselves, they just shut up because there's nothing going through their heads. It's a big problem.
Yeah.
It's not a universal problem. I have met exceptions to the rule, but it seems to be a thing.
Mm.
You know? Unless you have that device going 24/7 helping you update your own software and make you a little bit more operable.
Mm.
I just don't know what people are going to do.
Speaking of that, I did get a new phone after many years.
Okay, well, I got shat on Friday for my cell phone cover. I had like this one on that looked like it was bought by a Tani in Boxburg.
Because now you're like raw dogging it there.
I'm raw dogging it here because I was so.
Oh, you had like a wooden looking one.
Wooden? No, I had a brown leather one.
Brown leather.
Which I liked.
It was wood or leather
and
or something.
It just wore off so badly that I started to look like I was poor.
A
and,
poor
you know,
white.
Yeah, yeah, poor white. And I thought, I can't do that. You know?
So I get this phone because now you must know I had an iPhone 11.
It's very nice, Leanne.
Thanks. I had an iPhone 11. Decided not to get the 16, got the 15.
Yeah.
So a lot has changed since the 11.
Okay. What's the biggest surprise?
Well, firstly, oh my gosh. So I thought, let me just try the trade-in route. You know, they put your phone onto a little machine and they measure everything and see its performance and you can trade it in for a certain amount of money.
Now, an 11, you probably would have got like R1,000 for.
Yeah. So I thought, well, it's R1,000.
Sure, of course. Save on the new one.
And they came back with R329 or something.
Oh, so it was so fucked.
Yeah, they said the audio was screwed.
Wow.
And I've been saying,
what did you do to that phone?
Do you know that everyone's been like gaslighting me because I say, I can't hear anymore. And they're saying it's just because you're old. The audio was fucked on that phone.
So now that you got this one, you're like, I can hear.
So loud, I've got to keep turning it down.
Oh, that's amazing.
Yeah. So
so your hearing is back.
My hearing's back, which is great. I just needed to pop my ears.
That's good.
But yeah, and then it was quite funny. I stopped at one of those little vendors where they have all the cell phone accessories instead of buying any of them.
Oh, hell no. You don't want to. You know what? If you go to a store that has them, especially one of the like certified store, you're going to pay for a cover like R400.
So I went and got the screen protector, the cover.
You got this from one of those Zimbabwean oaks?
No, it was Pakistani guys.
Oh, Pakistani guys, even better. You got it for like, what, $50?
No, everything. Shame, they kept upselling me. They were like, now you need little covers for these. I didn't know that.
Oh, I don't have those.
So I've got these little goggles on here now.
Oh.
But eventually I was like, guys, please.
So how much did you get for the whole lot? How much did you pay for the whole lot?
R1,600.
Okay.
For everything.
All right. Well, you don't want it to fall.
And the pop socket.
There we go. That's apparently useful.
Yeah. Or you either have like something like this. You see, my hands are small, so.
Yeah. You won't reach. You can't do a reach around.
Yeah, I'd be able to do that, to do a reach around. So, yeah.
Okay, maybe there is a machine we can put Leanne in to see what she's worth.
Oh, gosh.
Wouldn't it be funny? I would love to have a machine where you put someone on it and it tells you what they're worth. Not in terms of how much money they have.
No, what like they're worth, how valuable they are.
Yeah, like, you know, age, hearing ability, seeing ability, strength.
Cognitive ability.
Cognitive abilities.
IQ.
Personality. Looks.
Flexibility.
Yeah. Difficulty to buy clothes for.
Executive functioning.
All that kind of shit. And then it gives you like a total out of 100.
And then you get benefits for wherever you are.
What, if you're shittier or if you're better?
Yeah, like if you're better, you get a better house.
Yeah, right.
Nicer things.
I think this machine is called life, actually.
It is.
I think that's how it works.
It works out automatically.
I think it's called life, and I think that's how it works. So, you know, if you feel things are unfair. I had this discussion with someone the other day. I went to a housewarming. It was pretty much my only outing for the weekend. And it was lots of fun. There were no people I knew there except the couple whose house it was. And it was lovely. I mean, I had some interesting conversations. The one guy was like, oh, you know, the problem with capitalism is, and I just left that conversation. And then later on, he insisted on asking me what I thought. And I thought I ducked him at that point. I was like, I'm going to get something to eat, or I'm going to get something to drink, or just leave me alone, basically. But he wouldn't. And then I suddenly thought, you know, it's the beauty of a free market situation is that if you feel that your boss or your company aren't looking after you and you think you deserve more than 100 rand, which is what you're being paid, then you can leave and go and find a job where you'll be paid 150 rand. And if you're worth it, someone else will pay you 150 rand. So that's your way to overcome exploitation. Right. And if you're a boss and someone is exploiting you because they're working, I don't know, 3 days a week, but they're charging you for five and they don't really deliver, then you have the right to fire that person. So it goes both ways. And as long as no one is forcing you at gunpoint to do a job, it's not slavery. If you're being paid and you're paying, then it's a free trade. And you can decide whether this suits you or not and move on. If you don't like it, you can just find another job or they can find another employee.
Yeah.
And that is like the most honest kind of transaction you can do. I'll pay you to do this stuff for me because you're either really good at it or it's something I can't do. And then you come in and you do it and you take your money and you go. And you can complain, obviously. Everybody's allowed to complain. But if it really becomes too difficult and you feel like a slave, leave. But remember, you were never a slave because slaves never got paid.
Yeah.
The whole point with slavery is that someone owns you and that you're not allowed to do that anymore.
The only thing is, a caveat to that is, can you just up and leave? Is employment elsewhere that easy? And sometimes it's not. You might have certain factors like age, for instance.
So you're saying then you have to take what you can get.
Yes.
Okay, but then you don't really have to complain. Because you don't have room to complain.
Exactly.
Because you are out of options. And maybe that is the best job you can get right now because it's the best job you deserve right now.
Yes.
And maybe
then don't complain about it.
Sure, and then maybe circumstances have really rallied against you and you have all these things that are not your fault that are standing between you and maybe something better. That's unfortunate, but that's also just luck of the draw.
Yeah. Maybe someone's given you a chance, someone who knows you.
Yeah.
And they said, I'll help you out.
Maybe.
Prove yourself.
And maybe they're going to pay you less than market wage, but they're saving you. You know, they're saving you from being unemployed and having zero. Oh, it's a tough business, especially in this economy. And on the news of that Trump tariff of 40%, 40% is a lot. I think it's going to hit a few businesses right between the eyes. But remember, who's responsible for this? You could blame Donald Trump. You could say, oh, it's so unfair that he's pushing this. But he gave our government the conditions, I think it was a month, maybe 2 months ago. And you won't have read this anywhere in the mainstream media either, by the way. This is how these guys have been covering up for the government. They are nothing but like the choir at the church that sings with the pastor, you know, the priest or the whoever is, he says some line from, I don't know, Philippians, and then they basically are the chorus. They sing it after him. They're singing from the same hymn sheet, literally. And that's what happens with the media in this country and the ANC. For some reason, I think it's a sunken cost syndrome where they've just been around each other so long. And they've done everything in cahoots. You know, the government has kind of said to the media, you have to help us. And the media said to the government, we'll help you. And they've done it through the Thabo Mbeki era, the Jacob Zuma era, and now. That's why it's taken them so long to...
Is it all media, though?
No, it's the big media houses who rely, by the way, on a lot of government advertising. I heard the other day that it used to be that the Sunday Times, which I think is still a newspaper, who knows, is mostly government advertising in the classifieds for jobs.
Jeez.
That makes up the majority of their revenue for that newspaper, or did up to a short while ago, as far as I can tell. Mm. Now, that relationship is just not kosher. Mm-mm. And so you've got people at these big media organizations who feel that they have to back the president. I don't know whether they think it's patriotic or whether they are – it's their business. Maybe that's their whole business. But they haven't said on any newspaper that I can think of, if those are still a thing, and even the online publication versions, what these conditions, these four conditions were, which is why I'm struggling with the fourth one because I haven't read it on any of those sites – they haven't told the South African population that this was the deal that after Donald Trump and Cyril Ramaphosa had their meeting, which everyone was watching, that was what they discussed afterwards. These are the four things we want you to do. Otherwise, each of those is going to get you an extra 10% tariff. So, you know, that's who you got to blame.
Do you think it was out of being stubborn that we didn't? Or like you say, because aren't bad enough yet for us to...
No, I don't think... you know what? That's a good question. I don't think it's going to have a good answer, though. I think our government are just cuck at everything.
Is it because they couldn't organize something?
They were
like
trying
that,
apparently, to get an extension.
Okay.
You know, like they do with everything. And I don't think... Like Cyril's surprised by everything, right? So he's like, oh, was that today? I thought it was yesterday. Oh, I thought it was next week Thursday. He doesn't know. I mean, he just doesn't. This whole governing thing, he's not taking seriously.
Mm.
But I do hope that they, as a fourth, whatever that fourth thing is that I can't remember, and I will during the course of this conversation. But I hope there's a fifth one, and I hope that is that they impose personal sanctions on the leaders of this country who are responsible for our suffering. Yeah. I hope that happens. I really do. And everybody who's opposed to that and they think, oh, well, the U.S. is interfering in our sovereignty and this is terribly unfair and why would you support another country doing this to us, Gareth? Well, you've got to hit your head sometimes. It's like no one wants their child to get smashed in the face by running straight into a baseball bat. But if the child is stupid enough to keep running into the baseball bat, it needs to eventually be hit in the face to know that that's not a good idea. You know, it's touching the stove. I could use much more mild examples, but I can't help thinking the best example for this government is watching the entire cabinet of South Africa, which is a lot of people, by the way, more than 10 baseball teams, running into baseball bats. That's what they are. These are not smart people. It's dumb pride, says Gray. Silly, puffed out chest, we will not be bullied garbage. Well, you're about to be bullied, and I don't think bullying is going to be a very pleasant experience for you. Cyril has no cards to play here. He just doesn't. And not all countries are equal. You know, this is a thing that, for some reason, the UN and shitty tin pot dictators all over the world have started to believe that they are equal to the superpowers in some way. That they are... They're batting, they're running with the big dogs, they're batting in the big leagues. And they're not. You're like, you get countries that are in the top tier, you get countries that are in the middle tier, and you get countries that are in the bottom. We may have been in the middle once. We were a very powerful country in Africa. We had a lot of power in terms of trade. We were an entry point to the rest of the continent. We had a largely industrialized economy. Whether we do or not anymore is debatable because... Eskom revealed the other day, I don't know if they meant to reveal this, that we are using less electricity than we were 10 years ago.
Yes.
So it's not that they can't supply it. That's obviously part of the problem too. Mm. But actually the demand for electricity has dropped.
We've had to find other ways.
I mean, we no longer have the big aluminium smelters that we used to have, which sucked up a lot of power. This is not good news, by the way. This is all terrible news because it means the economy is starting to fall to pieces. We no longer have the kind of big industry players like the Mittal Steels and before that Iscores, mm-hmm. and those sorts of things, which used to be the backbone of our industrialized economy. So the country is getting poorer and poorer, and now these tariffs are going to punish us even more. And I wouldn't be surprised if Cyril only wakes up at 9 o'clock this morning and goes, "Oh well, I missed the deadline. What are we going to do? Don't worry, I'll just drive to the takeout place in my Maybach and buy some hamburgers to eat this morning," because he doesn't really give a shit about you and me and everyone else in this economy. He doesn't. And the sooner you realize that, the better, because we need to bring about some change. I mean, these were not difficult things to do. If he'd done these four things, we'd be sitting looking at a very different picture. Perhaps, possibly, even quite favorable stuff. James has just sent me a message. You notice I don't have my laptop here.
Oh, yes.
Here, the other one was the classification of farm attacks as a priority crime. So that was, I mean, how hard is that? Because you know what they would do, right? I don't think Trump realizes or the U.S. government realizes how shitty our police force is. But they could just do that and then...
They could put it down on paper.
Yeah, and then they don't have to do
anything.
And then
not do anything about it.
So there we go. The exemption of USA entities rather from all black economic empowerment requirements. Again, why should American companies have to give...
Yeah.
A percentage of their business away when they weren't involved in South African apartheid policies, mm-hmm. right? And if you argue that they were, well, then you have to argue that everyone else in the world who was trading with us at the time also was.
And it should be like that for any country.
And good luck getting people to pay for something they didn't do. This may be a problem for many people who are fans of this sort of sins of the father stuff, but I didn't benefit, neither did Leanne. Why should we have to pay is also a good argument, right? So let's have that argument. But why should U.S. companies have to do it? No land expropriation without fair market compensation. Mm-hmm. Okay, again, simple. And a clear and unequivocal public condemnation of ANC's by the ANC of kill the Boer, kill the farmer. Again, not unreasonable.
No.
So there we go. That's what you're waking up to in terms of news this morning. All right. You had some things you wanted to discuss with us this morning. Leanne has, she always comes in with an agenda.
Do I?
Yeah, you do. You've got an agenda. I can never just sit and have a conversation with Leanne. There's always an agenda.
What gender? I'm a female.
Oh, yes. Very good. Oh, I watched a show. I started watching it last week, and I wasn't going to talk about it until I'd seen the whole of the first season. It's called The Sandman. Has anybody seen it?
Oh, yeah. I haven't watched it, but I know it's very popular.
Okay, so I like the premise, which was that this is the realm of dreams. The dream is one of... Did I talk about this on Friday?
I don't think you did Sandman.
Okay, so dream is one of seven siblings that are eternal beings. I think it comes from DC Comics. Or Neil Gaiman or both.
Oh, that's right. Why I haven't watched it.
Yeah, okay. Anyway, so Dream is this character, and it's a pretty good show. I mean, it's well put together. The acting is better than average. It's surprising. It's cute. But there's a problem.
Yeah.
Out of the eight or so relationships that are featured by characters in the show, seven of them are gay or trans or...
That's a big part of the population.
It's a fucking monstrous chunk, all right? So this does not reflect reality.
Yeah.
So I don't mind. Listen, I've never complained. I've never been one of those people like, oh, there's a gay relationship or there's a lesbian relationship or... there's a trans person. I'm not one of those sticklers for like, this shit doesn't happen.
Yeah.
And you shouldn't have any of it in shows. That would be ridiculous because it does happen in the real life. Mm. The difference is that it happens at a ratio of about 1 in every 10 in real life.
Mm.
Okay. And depending on what kind of society you are bouncing around in, it may be a little bit more or less, but it's somewhere around there. So for... I would say 90% of the relationships in this show are not between straight men and women, which I just thought is like they're laying it on too thick, you know? I don't mind. I'm totally okay. Bring on the difference, bring on the uniqueness, bring on the variety. Awesome. But honestly, 90% of the relationships are like guys with guys and girls with girls. And then there's a chick who's having a relationship with a dead person.
Oh.
Yeah. And then there are these, it's just, it's enough. And, and they also, you know, just to add insult to injury. Again, I don't think I've ever said on the show that I'm anti any particular part of the population. In fact, we're a very open-minded show. We talk about all this stuff like it is what it is. You know, it's a show about reality. But there's this one character who I don't even know why they inserted this person into the story, because they don't add any value. It's like this guy who owns a house where all these weird people live. And he wants to be a Broadway star. So he gets dressed in drag, and there are three, like 4 or 5 minute parts of three shows where this guy is doing a drag show. But they, three fucking times. I mean, I don't find that entertaining. I fast forwarded through it.
Yeah.
So it added no value to the story whatsoever, but it was obviously, I don't know, someone's nephew who wanted to be a drag queen and needed to be in this show, or they, I don't know who they're pandering to with that. It just struck me as completely fucking weird. And it spoiled the whole series. I don't want to watch season two. No, yeah. I just know it's going to be more propaganda. They're like shoving this propaganda.
I need to be able to identify with stuff that's going on and things that I watch.
I don't mind if I can't identify. I mean, it's a story about like the dream realm. So it's going to be weird. But it bears so little connection to reality that I just found I was being propagandized to. And it didn't rub me up the right way. Sorry.
Yep, there you
go. I just think enough, you know. Like Hollywood has got to stop doing this to us. They've got to stop telling us that the sky is orange. It isn't. It's blue. We all have eyes. Stop doing this. It's fucking nonsense. Really, it's not too much to ask either. There's got to be a reflection of something to do with the real world, even in a fantasy show like that. And it just, it put, not because right in front of you and saying, you have to eat this. And it looks bad to you, but they're going, you better eat it.
Yeah.
You better like this. Anyway.
Well, speaking of the absolute bizarre.
Yeah.
Have you seen any clips from the Jamie Kern Lima podcast?
Well, the one with Meghan Markle we've made a lot of fun of over time. Why is there an update?
No, there are just more and more.
There's so many
skits coming in, and I just like the way the one ABC presenter introduced the segment. Because, you know, you would think when you're watching ABC, you'd think it would be kind of neutral, the introduction to it. But this woman wasn't
having
any of
it. Have you got a clip for us?
I do.
Okay,
do
I love it. James? Let's watch, James. Let's go.
Now, I've tried all week to save you from the dangerous weapon-grade levels of cringe of this following interview, a podcast featuring Meghan Markle, but alas, we must all suffer together. Here is Meghan talking to a woman called Jamie Kern Lima, who seems to be even more fake and insufferable than the Duchess.
Very first question, because I think in friendship it's so important. And I think so many people also have this question for you is, you know, Meghan, how are you?
Yes, it really is that awful, the whole hour-long ordeal. May have even been longer. I may have blacked out from smacking myself in the head.
Okay, now she's actually on Sky News. Sorry, Sky, her name is Rita. She's terrific. I've seen a lot of her stuff. But how awful is that? That Jamie Kern Lima chick. Again,
I don't know who's worse, her or Meghan.
Meghan, how are you?
It is absolutely
She's
horrendous.
Bad, right? Now, why does she have to have a podcast? The Jamie Kern Lima show. Why? Who asked her? Her dogs?
She must have some kind of following. Wow. I just don't want to be
anyway,
those people.
I mean, it's just amazing to me how everyone is cringing the hell out over Meghan Markle. She's gone from being, I'm sure there were little girls who watched her riding in that carriage when she married Prince Harry and thought, oh my God, this chick is at the top of the world.
She had Harry on her dream board.
No, but let's forget about all that. Just say the first time you ever saw Meghan Markle, you were a little English girl and you were standing next to the road in Windsor and you watched this princess in a tiara and, you know, a horse-drawn carriage with a prince next to her looking beautiful. You knew that maybe she'd been a TV star before, but now she's a princess. This is like the best thing that could ever happen to any human being. And you were a little girl and you were at an impressionable age and you thought, oh, I could only wish that would happen to me. This would be heaven for me, right? And then you watch over the period of, what is it, 6 years since they've been married?
I think longer.
Maybe 7, 8. And you watch this unfurl into this pathetic pastiche of like a soap opera that's gone horribly awry. And suddenly she's on a shit show like that, talking about the power of yats.
I can't. You know? I can't even hear it.
It's so bad. And pretending that she's making original ideas come to fruition in her kitchen when nothing that she's doing is even slightly interesting, sprinkling fucking nasturtiums on her children's sandwiches, and she thinks she's discovered
and cereal and everything.
She thinks she's discovered the cure to cancer.
No.
How do you go from being a bona fide princess
who
had it all, and you and your husband have made such cuck decisions? This just proves, like, you could win the lottery 50 times in a row. You could be given everything you've ever dreamed of, and you can still fuck it up by your own cuck decisions. Because really, everything that's happened to Harry and Meghan has happened because of their cuck decisions.
I think the height of my respect for her was when she was an actress in Suits, because she was a good actress, and that was it.
Yeah, and she was the hottest person on Suits by a long way, right? I mean, she was, and she's still in that clip. Every time I see her, I think, well, nature and your genes dealt you a great hand. You're a very attractive human being, but you're just made of like shit sauce inside. You're like a turd sandwich filled with shit sauce. Inside, you just have the personality of Gargamel from the Smurfs. You're like the worst person. You've brought nothing but rotten fruit to bear for you and your husband and your children. I mean, they could have been running around palaces right now with nannies and having the most incredible privilege available to human beings. You and Harry could have cut a ribbon or two every 3 days. You could have dressed up for, you know, this and that event, been invited all over. Now, I don't think anyone in Hollywood wants them at their house because they could see they're just sponges and they're looking for a way to make some money.
Trying too hard.
Selling their shit. She's selling jam, for fuck's sake. You know, when we were going through financial difficulty, my mother sold jam. Like, that's what Meghan's doing now. My mom was like, would you like to buy some jam? Now Meghan's doing it, you know?
Oh, no.
It's so embarrassing.
Yeah, it is.
Fuck. Anyway. How awful. So that's apparently getting all kinds of attention every other week. You would have thought it would have died down by now. In a world where the attention span of people watching the news is that big, it's amazing how long this thing has lasted.
It's carried a while.
It's getting worse and worse. Okay. I saw that Didi Mabuza had died last week. He was our former deputy president. And I didn't say anything for the whole of last week because I realized, like, when I say things about people who are dead, I usually step on a couple of eggshells. People are very sensitive about the dead for some reason. So I've waited a week. I saw on one of the news channels, because it comes up on my Twitter feed, that they were doing a round-the-clock funeral coverage or whatever on Saturday. They were showing all of these. This is so tasteless, by the way. James Tian's in for Flex this morning, who's in KZN visiting his family. Tell me if this is tasteless. You have a whole bunch of black G-Wagons that the family clearly are driving. Because this guy pilfered, this Didi Mabuza stole so much money from us taxpayers, stole it from you, the people of South Africa, that his family drive around in G-Wagons. And ENCA think it's somehow a ratings bonanza for them to show. And again, I only saw this clip on X, so it may have been a very small part of the overall coverage. But to show his bloated, corrupt family driving out of an expensive house with a high wall in the northern suburbs of Joburg to go to Mpumalanga to see this piece of shit buried. This is what they want us to see. Now, I don't know anyone in Mpumalanga who would say, you know, well, thank goodness we had Didi Mabuza because he made this province a better place. But his family are leaving their expensive house in Johannesburg.
They're the only ones who benefited.
Inexpensive cars that they benefited from to go and see this man laid to rest. And I feel nothing. I feel nothing except that I'm going to set a reminder on my phone to remind me every month that Didi Mabuza is dead. Died at 63. I don't know. There are people in the ANC who are saying he was poisoned. I just don't think anyone cared about him for the last 5 years.
Yeah.
Remember, he was one of the Premier League. There was him, Supra Mahumapelo in the Northwest, and Ace Magashule in the Free State. These were three of the most crooked people in South African history that stole and manipulated money for their own foul ends to the point where their provinces are still basket cases. I mean, there is just nothing that works in the Northwest or in Mpumalanga or the Free State. And for anyone to make a fuss of Didi Mabuza's death, it's just such bad taste. It really is awful bad taste.
Yeah.
I don't have anything nice to say about him. Oh, good. We got Hanan. I've been missing Dr. Hanan.
Yes.
And we've had many questions.
We've been in a rapid cycle of deterioration. Awful decline.
We've been spinning out of control, Doc. Listen.
How are you doing?
Good. How are you?
Yeah, I'm doing well. I'm doing well. So what's been going on?
Well, let me tell you, your name came up on Saturday. I was at a housewarming, and there were a lot of depressed people there. And I said to them, you fucking people, you need to go and see Dr. Hanan because you're a disaster. And I'm having no fun talking. No, I'm kidding. They were actually very nice people. But one of them did say that she struggles with depression. And I said to her, what is wrong with you? Just get over it. Dr. Hanan told me you got to spend your time in the present. Stop being in the past. Stop being such a criminus. Get over it.
Simple, just simple.
Yeah, and you know what? She skipped away with the joys of winter under her toes.
A daisy tiara in her hair.
Yeah, she was like a happy jumping princess after I said that. All right, so listen, there's actually a lot to talk about. We had a couple of people who had questions for you, but here's one from one of our listeners. All right, a serious one. We hardly do serious stuff on the show, but this is serious. I'd be grateful if you could ask Dr. Hanan what advice he would offer to family or friends who have a loved one in a rehab facility under suicide watch. Oof. This is the first time that this person has been in such a facility. Although he has been struggling with depression for several years, we were allowed to visit him. We will be allowed to visit him in 2 weeks. Any guidance on how to approach this, both during the visit and beyond? I appreciate the positive impact you and your show continue to have on so many people. Keep up the incredible work, even with those brutal early mornings. Cheers, Tim. Well, I'm glad Tim acknowledges
the mornings
that we suffer
yes.
more than this person on suicide watch to bring him the show. Thank you, Tim. For that reason, we'll give you over to Dr. Hanan, who can help you with the other parts.
So suicide is on the rise. It's getting worse and worse. Men and women are attempting more suicide. They're succeeding. Because actually we live a life, unfortunately, with all the advances in technology, we live a life that's more meaningless, more purposeless. There's less drive, there's less chase, there's less meaning in attaining one's goal. People feel less attached or less connected to what resonates with their spirit, and people find an alternative, which is, well, I don't want to suffer anymore, and therefore the potential, the possibility of ending the suffering is a real alternative. So suicide is a real thing, and somebody's on suicide watch. What I would advise to you as a family member, two things. Number one is a sense of connection. We know that 75% of people that attempt suicide don't have meaningful connections in their lives, or at least they don't feel that they have meaningful connections in their lives. And apart from you obviously offering support and ensuring that they're getting the right help, offer meaningful connections. Try connect on common denominators, try and make sure that they are heard and they feel heard in terms of what they need, needs fulfillment, a sense of connection, a sense of belonging. And secondly, what's very important for me to mention, I think this will make a big difference to anybody whose family members are in rehab and who are away from kind of like the normal social day-to-day life, is all these rehabs, they really kind of isolate you from the world, and they teach you to do all kinds of magical things, but they don't integrate you really well into society. And what I suggest is at least teach them or work with the professionals who are on board, professionals who are in these rehab facilities, on integrating your loved ones into real society. Because once they are in rehab, they learn how to function within that culture, within that social environment. But once they get out, it's a brand new world and they don't know what to do with themselves. It's very difficult to integrate. They don't have a sense of purpose. And over 50% of people that attempt suicide, they lack a sense of purpose. So not only should you offer them that connection as a relationship, but you should offer them some form of an out or look out, help them look out for things that are meaningful to them, whether it's a job, whether it's some way of creating some income, whether it's connecting to their kids, reconnecting to the kids, reconnecting to their spouses, parents, loved ones, friends, colleagues, but finding a way to help them connect to other people, as well as offer them a sense of purpose once they're out, so they can integrate well into their normal social life once they're out of the rehab, artificial rehab community.
All right. This is actually an extraordinary thing that suicide is on the way up. I mean, you would think life is probably a lot less hard than it has been in any generation before this one. And I'm by no means making light of the fact that people feel that they're so desperate to do something about it that it could even mean, you know, leaving life behind is the best alternative. I find that very difficult to understand myself, but I know it's happening. What do we know about the statistics? Is it young people? Is it old people? Is it mostly men? Is it mostly women? I mean, do you have any idea on this stuff, Doc?
Yeah, so it's very much the younger generation. And because whilst technology, again, access to technology has gone up, and by all practical metrics, we are living much more, let's call it affluent lives. And we are well off than we were 50 years ago. Exactly.
Let me just qualify that by saying you don't have wild beasts attacking you in your cave. You're not scrounging for food.
Access to food, access to water. Exactly. But think about our sense of purpose. What did we have to do, Gareth, 35 years ago when we felt bored? Well, we'd knock on our friend's door and we'd go and play. We'd go outside. And these days, what do we do when the kids are bored? Well, they get on their cell phones. Everybody's kind of watching their sunset through their recordings on their cell phone, or watching TV while they're playing Candy Crush on their cell phone. Everything is done through their cell phone, which gave us an excuse to not connect to others. And this lack of connection and this increased artificial connection to the real world, because we think the thumbs up and the likes are real thumbs up and real likes. We think, like, you know, just because person X liked your post, we think that person X really liked your post. And we think, you know, you have 900 odd friends on Facebook. You actually think you have 900 100 friends in life. It just doesn't translate into real life. You know, if you were in trouble, would all those 900 friends come and call you or come and visit you or look after you? So it's an artificial way of living. It's like, you know, like put a sticker on real life, but it doesn't really represent real life. So we're becoming more lonely, less connected. We are lacking in sense of purpose, and that's what's driving the younger generation to find alternatives.
So, I mean, maybe the alternative to getting suicidal or to allowing suicidality to become a part of your everyday life, limit the amount of time you spend on these devices would probably be a good bit of practical advice. And as we were saying jokingly at the beginning of this, is like live in the moment. Be around the people you want to be around. Try to make the most of every situation and find meaning and purpose in little things before you start looking to save the world and expect some, you know, Marvel superhero-sized cosmic journey to alight on your lap and take you into some unbelievable world. Like, maybe the little things are where the magic is located.
Yeah, very much. You know, Gareth, how many times do I say on the show, if you want to have freedom, that comes with responsibility. And nobody's coming to save you. You have to take responsibility for your own life. How many times do I have to say the chin up versus the chin down? Right. You got to look forward. You got to ask yourself, not why do I feel, but what can I do?
And that's the other thing, is like, stop externalizing responsibility. Like, there is actual stuff you can do right now. You can change in your own life. Who can control the stuff that is beyond your abilities to control? Don't worry about that. The government, the state of the roads, the state of electricity, you know, the geopolitical tariff increases that, you know, Donald Trump is busy implementing in our economy. You can't do anything about that. But what you can do is tidy your own house, is make sure that your little part of the world looks nice, is wash your face in the morning, and, you know, take care of someone else, help somebody in your neighborhood who needs help. Those are the things you can do. And guess what? You'll feel better.
No question. You got to live your life with intent. And I always tell people, what's your framework? What's your way to getting you from point A to point B? What is your point B? Ask 100 people, what are your goals in life? And 99.9 will not have a clue. How do you manage your life without goals? How do you manage your life without direction? And I always tell people, I never blame the person for not getting from point A to point B. I blame their framework. And people then say, well, are you not allowing the person to abdicate responsibility? And I say it's the opposite. The moment you blame yourself, in other words, the reason why I'm not behaving is because I'm depressed. The reason why I'm not behaving is because my grandmother was an alcoholic. The reason why I'm not behaving is because I'm lazy. The reason why I'm not behaving is because I've got ADHD. Now you are giving yourself permission to not get from point A to point B. Now you're justifying why you're not getting there. But the moment you blame the framework, now it's your responsibility to go and alter, tweak, upgrade, level up your framework to get yourself from point A to point B. But the most difficult question that anybody can ask themselves is, what do I want? We all have these grand visions. I want to be healthy and I want to be wealthy. And I want to have an amazing life and I want to be happy. But hold on one second. What does it mean? What does it mean wealthy? And why do you want wealth? What does it mean to have a great life? And what does it mean to you? Exactly, exactly. There must be meaning beyond the hard work. Listen, hard work is inevitable. You know, as how many times do we say it on the show? Being healthy is hard. Being unhealthy is hard. Being in a good relationship is hard. Being in a poor relationship is hard. You know, being financially secure is hard. Being financially insecure is hard. The hard is part of the deal, but what's behind the suffering?
Well, if you set stupid goals, you'll win stupid prizes. So
completely right.
Honestly, completely right. Like, so many people have shitty goals, and then they wonder why, when their life ends up being super ordinary or worse, it's so unfair. Look at those people who've decided that they're going to go and live in a log cabin on an island. Look at how happy they are. Well, you set shitty goals. Maybe if you'd set a goal like that, you would have achieved it and you'd have been, in your own mind, happier. There's one other thing I want to ask you before you go, though. Have you ever been suicidal?
Never. Never. And by the way, have I ever thought about it? Have I ever contemplated it? Has it ever crossed my mind? Of course. I mean, listen, we are thinking creative human beings. When we all go through separable states, we all go through loss and we all go through grief and we all go through disappointment, and our first girlfriend breaks up with us, and our first you know, friend tells us we're not good enough, and a teacher says this, and a mom or a dad says that. So of course you think, I want to escape the suffering, and that's an option, but it's never an option. So the thought always crosses, and everybody's had the thought of, I wonder what life would look like if I wasn't here. I wonder who would be at my funeral. I wonder who would be sad. But it never crosses that line, okay, well, what do I do about it? How do I materialize it? Because actually I look at the alternative, and how do I make my life meaningful?
Sure. All right. Thanks, Doc. We will be back with Dr. Hanan next week, Monday. Send us anything that you want to ask him, like that thoughtful email from Tim, who's obviously dealing with a very serious situation himself. But it doesn't have to be serious. You can ask us stupid stuff as well. Dr. Hanan is good at all of it. He really is. His name comes up often when I'm talking to people, and I think, wow, okay, I'm not the shrink, but he's the smart shrink. Here's some free information from him. And then they kind of look, and I'm pretty sure I'm translating it as well as I can. I'm not qualified. Yeah. They look at me, and then you could see something kind of, the penny drops. And who knows, maybe they improve a little bit, but a little bit is better than none.
Yeah, and like the doc says, it's about setting the right goals. But he's always got these nuggets of information that are easy to remember, but they're actually quite easy to implement as well.
Practical, yeah.
Yeah.
That's what I like
the most. Doesn't need to be a year's worth of in-depth therapy. You know, it's just applying these little nuggets of information.
All right. Well, there we go. Serious thing for this morning. By the way, we've got a very interesting discussion coming up. I think you'll find it pretty interesting, Leanne, with someone who's been on the show before. His name is Renin Ayres, and he's put together a survey about Gen Z, which I think you're going to find very, very exciting. So it's called the Gen Z Economy Report, and we'll find out all about that. This is a collaboration between Student Village, which he's one of the founders of, and Bronwyn Williams, who does Flux Trends, and of course our show Biz Trends here on The Real Network. So we're going to find out from Renin what we need to know about Gen Z.
Love that.
No frills, no holds barred, all the stuff you actually need to know. And if you want to get hold of Dr. Hanan, you can get in touch with us, contact@thereal-network.com. Email us today. We'll put you in touch with him. Or we'll get him on the show to deal with your thing, whatever it is, anonymously. All right, we'll be back in a moment, just after 7.